Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is episode 16 of our coverage of the 2023-24 season. I'm your host, Gage, as usual. And it's been something of a down week, both for the Premier League, as it's on winter break, and for those of us who still find our home here in North Texas, as we are on an enforced winter break at the moment. It is not a down week for Slapcast, however, as we're back in full force. And today I'm joined by Ethan. Hello, Ethan.
Well, Gage, trying to stay warm in this weather. Very chilly out.
I hear you. It's an igloo in here, dude. I'm also joined by Reese. Hello, Reese.
Hello.
And Josh. Josh, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? I'm a little bit warmer. Sorry I cut you off, but I'm more than good this week. I'm a little bit warmer just because it hasn't really like sleeted or snowed at all, but it's still like freezing. I think it's like in the 20s right now. But how are you?
Well, I'm feeling spry.
Oh.
On day three of our annual Texas winter disaster TM. And I'm interested to see what you've concocted for our question of the day, which took you about 45 minutes to remember before we started recording here today.
Okay, to be fair, I thought of this before like Christmas. So it's been in and out of my brain for weeks, and I probably should have wrote it down, but it's actually a decent question. So the question of the week is, for your club, who has been the most bang for your buck signing? So, like, who has, like, costed, like, I'll answer first to give a little bit better example, but academy players do not count. So, okay. I'm going to start off with my, it's Jamie Vardy, who was bought for £1 million from non-league Fleetwood. And ended up scoring 160-something Premier League goals, led us to an FA Cup, a Premier League, quarterfinal of the Champions League, just has done some amazing things. And my runner-up was Mahrez, who, if Mahrez actually stayed at the club for the same stint that Vardy did, would definitely be, because we bought him for like 560,000 euros from Le Havre. But who has an answer ready?
I have a joint answer because I think they actually cost the same amount, and that is both Martin Odegaard and William Saliba for £30 million each, which is a lot more money than you were talking about, but just for those quality players in this market is just absolutely ridiculous. I think if I'm picking one, I'll go Odegaard because he's turned into our captain as well, and he is just unreal. I think £30 million, especially after he was with us on loan at first, and I actually didn't think we should permanently sign him. I thought his loan was kind of disappointing, and he was also injured.
The prices are also like so different just because of like stature of the club. Like mine and Ethan's are probably going to be very similar, because like our record signing was Tielemans for like 38 million.
Yeah. The other I thought of was Martinelli, because we only spent like 5 million, and that's lower, but I don't think he's had near, I think he's a good player, but he hasn't had nearly the same impact as Odegaard.
You think Odegaard has had 6 times the impact?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go next. Jean-Philippe Nomplin. No way. Baldy's been over Twitter recently, so I thought I'd bring his name up, but no, it was a hard choice because, you know, we've had a lot of young talents recently signed for cheap and driving a transfer fee up in stature. But I'm going to go with Elise. He's been performing well recently. Signed him for $8 million from Reading. And Lord knows how much he's going to go for whenever we do sell him. So, yeah.
I have a true answer and then an honorable mention. That is an honorable mention on the pure basis that he hasn't been playing for us for that long. But my true answer is Sun Heung-min, who we signed from Bayer Leverkusen for $20 million, which back when we signed him in 2015 was not quite as cheap as it is now. But $20 million for 114 Premier League goals and a few of the most critical Champions League goals we've ever had as a club, I think, as well as the fact that he's now our club captain, he's been there for almost a decade, he's Mr. Tottenham, you know, whatever you want to say about him. I think 20 million is, he could have been easily worth 6 times that for the return that we've gotten out of him. So my honorable mention is Guglielmo Vicario, who we signed for 19 million this summer, who for my money has been the best goalkeeper in the league this season. So extremely good value for money on that signing. And it has only been 21 games that he's been you know, at Spurs. So jury's still out long term, but as far as value is concerned, I think we've probably already gotten our money's worth out of him just from this first half of the season. So
I like it. That was a good one. I liked it.
Our most seasoned listeners will know that this is where we generally place the mystery segment of the week, but we're going to hold off on that until after the match reviews this week. And I think you'll see why when it gets here. So make sure you stick around. I think you all are going to enjoy this one. It's kind of a staple of the podcast, and this one's going to be a fun one. So, all right, let's dive into the limited Premier League action that we have this week. Of course, I mentioned that it is the winter break, which is somewhat of a staggered winter break, actually, in the fact that there were 5 games this weekend and there will be 5 games next weekend. Now, other than Leicester, who we will talk about later, Josh, don't you worry. I have it written down this time, so I won't forget. Spurs are the only club of ours that played this week. So Arsenal and Palace, who play each other, will have to wait until next week for some analysis. But we're actually going to start with the game on the Saturday that really piqued my interest, and I'm sure all of yours as well, was Man City snatching a late win at St. James's Park through a last-minute goal from unsuspecting individual Oscar Bob, who we mentioned last week on the show for having one of the best names in the league. My overarching question from this game that I want to pose to you all is that, did we somehow underestimate the impact that Kevin De Bruyne's return is going to have to this team and to the Premier League this season?
I kind of thought we did. I mean, he literally came on when they had a set piece, and I thought he was going to score, but then he proceeded to score like minutes later. And then he obviously got the assist for Oscar Bob. So even if he's like still recovering from his injury, he just has his tactical mind is so huge. It's ridiculous.
He also just has that star power, right? Like him coming onto the pitch raises the spirits of the entire team because they just know that they have him who's either going to look for them on the pass or be an option and just be able to score out of nowhere. Like he's just absolutely ridiculous.
And this, like, having him as a super sub for the next few weeks as he's getting fit. It's like in the post-match interview, he was like, yeah, I only knew I had like 20, 30 minutes to actually give like my full. And like just being able to bring on Kevin De Bruyne as your super sub is absolutely ridiculous.
Especially go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and the crazy thing is that Haaland is still out. So imagine KDB and Haaland back in the same team where Haaland is going to make these insane runs and De Bruyne is going to be able to find him somehow.
Mm-hmm. It's a frightening prospect, especially in a game like this, where I think Newcastle struggled a little bit for midfield control as it was, even against City's, what I would call a makeshift version of their midfield. I think Newcastle are suffering a lot from the lack of Sandro Tonali at this moment. Bruno Guimarães can only do so much. I mean, he's partnered in this game by Lewis Miley, who's had a good showing in the games that he's played. And obviously he's only 17, so he's got plenty of room to grow, but he's not necessarily there in terms of the physicality. That's one aspect of his game that I think probably will improve with age, but for the moment he struggles with. And then Sean Longstaff, who for all his merits is a technically limited player. And I think De Bruyne coming in and waltzing through into space directly. I think he'd only been on the pitch for 3 minutes and 40 seconds when he scored the goal. He basically paced himself right through the midfield and slotted into the bottom corner. So I think for games like that, when City are already dominating the midfield, which they do very often, but to be able to bring on Kevin De Bruyne in a situation like that is just a weapon with no counter, essentially.
Yeah, especially considering the one player you would, at least from a Newcastle's perspective, hope is playing, because he does offer more physicality in the midfield, and he's just more of an athletic player, very aggressive minded player. Who was injured for this game was Joe Linton.
Out for the rest of the season.
Yeah. So that's definitely a big miss. Because he really complimented either, I'm forgetting his name, not Lewis Miley, the other one.
Sean Longstaff.
Yeah. Longstaff and Miley, who both, you know, they're lacking a little bit in the physicality, like you mentioned. So, you know, that perfect player to compliment them would be Joe Linton, but yeah, they definitely are part of the contingent of teams that just have this plague of injuries that are really upsetting their season.
Yeah, and they are starting to get some of their players back, particularly in the defensive areas. Sven Botman's made his return in recent weeks. Fabian Scher and Dan Byrne all returning from injury in recent weeks, which is good. But then, of course, as you mentioned, Joe Linton injured, and now their only three senior midfielders are the ones who started the game, so who are healthy at least are available. So not great in terms of their availability in midfield and their ability to change the game as it goes on, because one thing that these injuries really affect that you wouldn't really think of off the top of your head, and I know this from experience with Spurs this season, is if these are their only three available senior midfielders, they're going to be playing a ton of minutes. And that means their performances, they're going to have diminishing returns on their performances as we get throughout the season, especially in the busier months like February is going to be for them. So I think that is a concerning aspect of the season for Newcastle, as it has been all year. One concerning aspect of the game for Man City is that goalkeeper of the year, Ederson, came out with an injury only in the 8th minute. So a very early withdrawal for him to be replaced by Stefan Ortega. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to launch a slander campaign, more or less. Not actually, but I just want to ask a question of, where does Ederson genuinely rank in terms of goalkeepers in the league and in the world right now? And the reason I ask this question is not because I think he's a bad goalkeeper by any stretch, but I think he benefits a lot from the players in front of him. So I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
I think he does, but I also think he makes some very excellent saves. I think he suffers from not being able to be on the international stage just because Alisson is the better keeper. I think he's top three or four in the league at a minimum. And I would say probably like minimum top eight in the world. I think his like status not being in the starting goalkeeper, kind of like Ter Stegen. Like Ter Stegen was not viewed as like a world-class goalkeeper because he wasn't the number one for Germany, because Manuel Neuer played forever.
The thing about him too is I think he doesn't really, like, I don't really watch him play, and like times that they get scored on, I'm never thinking, oh, Ederson should have saved that. Mm-hmm. I think he definitely makes less like world class saves than the likes of Alisson. I think definitely maybe a slight step down, but I think he has that in the locker, maybe just less consistently. And you know, ball playing, I think, again, loses out to Alisson, but I would say he's probably the second best ball playing goalie in the world, which is just so huge to the game right now, especially, but even to City's squad, just the way they play. So yeah, I think I'd agree, you know, top three in the league. I might even say top five in the world.
Yeah, I said top eight to be like safe, just because I don't have like my top keepers in the world list.
Yeah, I'd have to think. I don't have a list on the top of my head, but I think if I like really thought about it, I think he'd end up in the top five.
Yeah, I also think, not from a distribution perspective, because he is a much better distributor than the player I'm going to compare him to. But he is very De Gea like De Gea never made any outrageous saves. He just did all of the little things right, which when you play in front of a better defense, he's going to have less weird stuff happen than like that Taya did, who had a fluid defense of different players for his last 4 or 5 years at United.
I would actually agree with that, because when Palace played City and we ended up getting that comeback draw, Ederson didn't look that great. He just had, you know, a few mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I typically would consider him to be, you know, top five in the world, probably top three, four in the Premier League. The one thing I think contributes to, you know, this questioning of his spot is just how like City just rotates their defense so much. I mean, we saw them bring in Gvardiol, and then they started using Ake more, just dealing with injuries as well, because obviously John Stones was like one of their stalwart center backs, but now he's not really playing as much. So it's just, you know, getting used to the change in front of him all the time.
I also think the conversation can arise more often just because City have the ability to replace anyone whenever they want and just throw money at the problem. Like if they wanted to sign Donnarumma, they could go sign Donnarumma tomorrow if they wanted to.
I think the fact that all of you, maybe except for Ethan, but definitely recent Josh, brought up Allison as his benchmark is a point in his favor, because Allison, mm-hmm. I think, is pretty unequivocally the best goalkeeper in the world. Oh, I think nobody would dispute that right now. Yeah. And as far as there aren't any other goalkeepers that come to mind that I can definitively say are better than Ederson. I mean, the ones that come to mind for me are like Courtois. I see. Right now I'm going to say Vicario, but I don't think longevity is not there in terms of the performances. And then, I don't know, Jan Oblak maybe is a name that constantly gets thrown out there, but
I throw Donnarumma in there because Donnarumma has been very consistent. He just hasn't, he's not on the biggest stage, because like in the Euros, he was absolutely insane.
True.
And that was like the biggest stage that he's been able to play on, just with how, and I guess the PSG COVID run in the Champions League. But
I wouldn't definitively say he's better than Ederson though. So
no, but he's definitely in the conversation. And yeah, if you look at different things, like Donnarumma's distribution isn't that well, but like his length and his reactions are significantly better, which like length Ederson can't do about, but Donnarumma definitely has that on him. But that's like a different, completely other.
It depends how much you weigh shot stopping versus distribution as well, because at least in the City squad, I literally think the only better fit would be Allison, because they value distribution so much. And I would say Ederson is the second best distributor in the world. So like, there's just no contest.
No, but I mean, that's also like completely stylistic. Like,
yeah,
but because they could be completely different depending on who you want. Like some managers probably don't want their keeper touching the ball almost at all. And other ones probably do, but it's very different depending on the team.
One other thing I wanted to bring up that Ethan briefly mentioned was Yoshkov Gvardiol, who was signed for an insane price tag this summer. I think not enough is being made about the fact that he's shite. Like, I don't actually think he's that good. I don't think he's very good on the ball. I don't think he has a lot of technical quality in terms of his passing, his range of movement, his defensive qualities. He is part of what I have called the West Brom revolution at Man City, which is Pep just signing a bunch of huge people to boss the game physically. And I don't know, maybe I'm missing something on Gvardiol, but I definitely don't think he was worth the price tag that they, not that it matters to City, but I don't think he was worth the price tag that they shelled out for him.
I think it's stylistic. Like, I think if he was in a team that didn't have possession the whole game and instead was in a team that had to defend the whole game, he might look better, to be completely honest. Like, I don't think he's that good. I don't know how to describe it other than like, I think he's really good when he was getting toasted by Messi in the World Cup, I thought he still looked pretty good. It was just Messi. Right. And that's kind of what I'm thinking of. Like when you just have to defend, like your life depends on it for majority of the game, I kind of think that's where he shines.
And to back off, to piggyback on that, he's 21. He's younger than we are. And so obviously, you know, it's going to take time. I know, way to drop a bomb, Ethan. But, you know, he's still going to take time to develop. And I mean, he literally just got a bunch of this, like, great publicity from his, like, performances with Croatia and all that. And so he'll come into a better performance soon, I'm sure.
The teams he's also been in do not rely on their center backs to be a part of the buildup. Like, the Croatian team does not rely on their center backs. It's very, like, defensive midfield and fullback driven. And same thing for Leipzig. Ever since the American managers have left Leipzig, they are very focused on very, not exactly the same, but similar tactics to Croatia, where they rely on the midfielders and the fullbacks to drive the attack, versus City have no problem recycling the ball and just keeping possession again and again.
I think, too, you already kind of mentioned the price tag thing. I am kind of over... I've talked about it with my dad sometimes because it kind of became a bigger thing for Arsenal with the signing of Declan Rice, because this was kind of the first time in a while. I guess not the first time. We spent a ton of money on Pepe, although it was over, you know, however many years. But the first time in a while where it was all up front, right? It was like a ton of money. And I was talking about it with my dad, and we were basically saying, like, I think it's fine to criticize a club for how much money they're spending on a player, but the conversation of, you know, is he good enough to be in this team wouldn't be happening if the club had spent less money. So like, it's not like he decided he was going to be worth 80 million, right? He had no say in that. He just joined the team. So I think using the price tag to try and evaluate how good he is might be a little unfair, because it's not, that's like the one thing he didn't have a say in, right?
I think that's fair, but also like that's the worth that City put into him, whether it's like performance versus potential. Like that price tag, obviously, like his potential is what had drove a large chunk of that price tag. But also, if you're spending that much on a player, there's some need for that player to perform to at least a certain like pedigree.
Normally, I'd say yes, but since it's City, it almost gets nullified, right? Because they can just kind of spend however much they want. I think the same thing about United, because they spend so much on every player ever, but they just have a quadrillion dollars that it doesn't matter.
True. I still think it's an important – it is a important metric just because of, like, finance, like, especially, like, you bought a player for how much did they buy him for? I don't even
remember. 70 million.
If you bought someone for 70 million, I would kind of expect them to at least put in an above average performance. And I don't think he has put that in every time. I would say he probably hasn't even put in that like 50% of his appearances so far.
So you said something interesting, Josh. I think it was Josh, it might have been Ethan, but about performance versus potential. I think the swinging pendulum of price tags has swung outrageously in the favor of potential. Like, price tags in the modern game are driven a lot more by your potential production rather than what has already been produced in the modern game. I think the fact that so many of the actively producing players who are performing at the highest levels are locked into long contracts, and there's no possible way that a club is going to let them leave, you know, without an exorbitant sum of money, has meant that clubs are now having to put out a much larger outlay for potential performances rather than actualized performances. And I think maybe to your point, Reese, using the price tag type thing to beat players with is not 100% as valid as it used to be, because clubs are doing this all the time now where they're essentially gambling on futures by buying players who are young and unproven, especially as far as the Premier League is concerned. So
yeah, that's also just like the way the market has swung. It's just kind of forced the teams to invest that much money in a player early on, just because if they don't, the club's not going to sell him to you.
All right. I think we got a pretty good deal out of the Newcastle City game. I think
thing I kind of wanted to add. Do you think with the new – this is like a long time ago. Do you think Miguel Almiron could make a return to midfield with the state of – or is he too important as that I'm playing on that right wing for Newcastle?
I don't think he would. He doesn't offer – the thing we were talking about them lacking in midfield with missing Joelinton and Tonali, I don't think Almiron provides. I think I would say Lewis Miley and Sean Longstaff are probably more physical players than Almiron is. So I just don't think that's what they need in midfield, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
The other thing about that is when he played in midfield, it was a different system, and he played more of a, I won't call it a traditional 10 because he's not really creative, but he played
more like an advanced 8 almost.
Yeah, like an advanced 8 who kind of doubles as a shadow striker.
Yeah.
And I don't think that role exists anymore because Newcastle is trying to essentially have 3 box to boxes in that position all times instead of having someone like Almiron. So I don't think they would. Maybe in an absolute pinch, if another one of their midfielders gets injured, then I think everything's on the table, right? But for the time being, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Man United playing host to Spurs, earning a 2-2 draw. I'm going to come to Reese first, actually, on this one, because I think these are the two clubs that he hates most in the Premier League. And so I'm curious to see what you, as an opposition fan, have taken away. I want one takeaway from a Spurs perspective and one takeaway from a United perspective, if you can crystallize it down to one point. It could be more than one.
Yeah. Going off topic first, I think I actually might hate Chelsea more than I hate y'all. Like, I hate y'all for the rivalry, but I don't actually hate y'all for reals. You know?
See, I kind of feel like, Arsenal fans, I mean, I think this is probably just Twitter and the Spurs parasite in my brain, but I feel like Arsenal fans don't hate Chelsea that much because there's so many players who go between the two clubs. But
I hate Chelsea. But when they join us, then I forget it.
Okay.
I'm like Dumbledore, like pulling the memory out.
I feel like y'all also feel like that because y'all are like so close as friends. I feel like a lot of Arsenal fans don't have Tottenham fans for friends.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. This is totally off topic. I think it's kind of forced. Because like a long time, I understand why the rivalry existed, but like, and I'm not just saying it like in both ways. A long time, there hasn't been that long of a period where both teams are kind of same point. Like it was a while where we were better and then a while where Tottenham were a lot better. We've never really been competitors, maybe except, you know, in the last
15-16, maybe was like the only time when we were truly.
Yeah. It's like I could count on like one hand how many times we've actually been competing for like the same thing. Right.
Because 15-16, so, Arsenal weren't really shooting for the title. Like they just kind of ended.
It just kind of happened. Yeah.
At the end.
But that's what I mean. Like I feel like a lot of it's kind of forced just for the sake of the rivalry, which I think is fine too. I think having a rivalry is fun. Anyway, back on topic. So I wasn't surprised at all. This is kind of touching on both teams at the same time that it ended in a tie because y'all kind of are perfect foils for each other because y'all love to have a high line. United love to play counterattack. They, you know, have looked suspect in defense. Y'all commit a lot of bodies forward. So it was always, you know, there's opportunity for goals on both ends for sure. I think had Tottenham been full strength, I know United technically aren't full strength either, but I think had y'all been full strength, you would have comfortably won this game. Because I definitely think the reasons you lost were you can kind of pinpoint down to specific players who wouldn't normally play. I think Højbjerg looks really bad.
He was atrocious.
I think, you know, who else? I'm trying to
Skip,
remember.
I call them Dumb and Dumber, Højbjerg and Skip together. And I think Skip actually had his best game of the season, but his best game of the season is a lower bar than Sar, Basuma, Madison, Kulusevski would be.
Yeah. Just those players, like the midfield. If you swap your whole midfield is essentially rotated right now. If you swap in your best players, I think it's no contest.
The midfield just did such an awful job of covering for the fullbacks. It made it so easy for United to get on the counter and like get it to Rashford or Garnacho. Like it just made it y'all made it so easy. And I don't think it was even stylistic. I think it was just not lacking quality or just lacking quality in the midfield that just like weren't aware of like, oh, Poro's in basically an inverted winger right now. I should probably track back a little bit and cover the right side a little bit. He just kind of like, there are multiple times where that happened and it led to both goals, I think.
Yeah, that's down to Højbjerg for me. I think that's the role of the Postecoglou six is to mobilize and cover off the inverted fullbacks. And Højbjerg has the mobility of a skyscraper, so he just does not fit the system. And I know he wants to leave. And again, this is a little bit like Newcastle because in this game, these were our only fit and available senior midfielders. Because Kulusevski was out with illness. Lo Celso is the missing man. I don't know what he's available sometimes and he's not available other times. Don't know what's going on with him, but yeah, it was forced, but yeah, Højbjerg needs to be shifted on as soon as possible, in my opinion.
I think the first goal is maybe a little harsh to blame him entirely. I think part of it's his fault, but also that finish was just...
It's an insane finish. Yeah,
it's totally ridiculous.
It was also just like great footwork from Højlund. I I know we talked about this last week, how he has like genuinely looked better since he scored against Villa, but he actually like had probably his best game outside of the Champions League. He looked yeah. very good, took a lot of attention from the center backs, and I think opened up the game for Garnacho and Rashford to be
open yeah.
up a
little bit. I was about to say, I think Rashford is, at least from the games I watched, him and Hoyland really weren't meshing well. Like they were kind of competing with each other. Mm-hmm. I don't think on purpose, but like they weren't really complementing each other's styles of play. And I think they did in this game, and you saw it for the second goal as well. But
yeah, I think we talked
that
about
was it. Yeah, that was kind of the bright spot for United, I would say.
I think we talked about it earlier. I think last week or a while ago is they have struggled to find a wing. Like I think Garnacho does a very good job of getting down the line and getting balls into Hoyland. But I think on the other side, they have struggled to find a winger who will actually get balls into Hoyland. Like every winger who plays on that opposite side wants to invert, and they just have not been able to figure out how to complement each other. And I think you can even see it with the press. Their press is the commentators talked about it a lot, but their press is so disorganized. Like when they are all on the same page, it is probably one of the best presses in the league, but they're never on the same page. They were on the same page maybe once on Sunday, because one will press, but then no one else is covering off the option, so it's not actually doing anything. It just looks very disorganized. And you see the complete opposite on the other end, because Spurs' press is very organized. Like, everyone seems to understand their role, and it seems like Ten Hag hasn't been able to be like, this is how I want you to actually press, which was the thing that he was supposed to be able to come in and teach them how to do.
I also think one part of why Hoyland has struggled so much too in recent weeks, and a little bit as far as Rashford as well, because he's also struggled this season. I think that was only his third Premier League goal of the season, second goal that he scored against Spurs. Yeah, and
in all comps.
Okay, yeah. So I think they struggle a lot in the middle phase of buildup. One thing that I noticed is, consider their midfield. You have Bruno, who is kind of the front man of the press, I would say. He's kind of the guy who organizes the press, leads the charge for the most part. And then he's generally the most advanced of the midfielders. Where I think they have a problem is getting it from your Christian Eriksen, your Kobbie Mainoo, your Scott McTominay when he comes on, through Spurs or opposition Spurs. I'm using Spurs in this case, but anyone. Through the midfield line of the opposition to the front four, who I'm including Bruno in. I think getting that middle phase of buildup where, because Eriksen, for one thing, looks like a shell of the player that he was at Spurs, but for another thing, just struggles to find passes through the lines, which I think is unusual for Christian Eriksen, even though he is kind of a shell of what he used to be. And I think part of that is down to the system and the fact that they just don't show defeat. I think that they don't show defeat in the middle phase of the of buildup. And I think it's hugely damaging to the front four. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think, I mean, it's like literally every time they look good, it's because they're doing like a really long ball counterattack type of thing where they just completely bypass the midfield. And it's entirely down to the system, because there's no one available, because their entire front four, like you said, including Bruno, they're looking to counterattack. So all of them just go as far forward and they just leave those players behind, right? Mainoo or Eriksen are just left in the dust, and they have no other options besides just booting it.
One thing, this is a Spurs thing. I think one thing, especially while Son is gone, they need to put the ball on net. I think one thing that a lot of Spurs players struggle with, almost every single forward wants to bend it in to the side netting, the opposite side netting. Just especially if you're playing someone like Onana, who has struggled with rebound control and just making routine saves, just blast it at him. Like, do what Hoyland did, just put your boot through it and get it at least on net to test the keeper. Because this trying to bend it into the side netting, I know Werner this was his like fourth start all season, but you have got to actually test the keeper, because Onana did not have to do that much. The times he was tested, it was pretty much shot directly at him or it was a goal. So I just think they need to just put the ball on net and stop trying to bend it in. It's like, you don't need to do that every single time.
Well, I mean, take a note from Bentenker, who ran through and basically just chopped it into the middle of the goal and it went in, right? Yep. So just, yeah, balls on net. It's like, we talked about it all the time about how Spurs like to cross the ball into the danger area to try to generate chaos. Well, that can also be done by producing a rebound off the goalkeeper, or hell, maybe a goalkeeper like Onana lets one through. You never know. It's just never a bad idea to get balls to the net. So yeah, that's, I'm with you, Josh.
As far as a bright spot for Spurs, because I kind of gave one for United, this maybe not your the standout thing of the game, but I think the most important thing of this game was Richarlison getting on the score sheet again, because he is just him continuing to score is just so huge, because he has a lot of mental blocks to overcome, and just every goal is a chip. He's like chiseling, he's like making some statue in his mind. This was his seventh of the season or eighth?
Yeah, like seventh. That.
Yeah,
well, eighth in all comps, seventh in the league.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's proven that he's a good player in the past, especially, you know, at Everton. And then, you know, he just completely fell off, and everyone knew it was a mental thing. It was just a matter of time, but he's finally unlocking that. And I think it's absolutely huge, because y'all didn't really sign somebody after Kane. And that was kind of a big deal, right? Or I guess, yeah, it was kind of a big deal, because Richarlison was now the guy, but wasn't scoring. Or I guess Son was an option, but and maybe that contributed to it as well, because it's big shoes to fill. But yeah, it's just really big.
Speaking of their signs, I do think Timo Werner had a decent game. I do think, I mean, obviously, like, he has not played much, and he played way well. I really thought he was going to either come off at halftime or come off at like 55 or 60 minutes.
I think that's due to the fact that we had no options on the bench more than anything. But
I think he genuinely had a good game. I think, like, as more appearances come, he'll get a little bit better. But his, like, getting down the wing and getting crosses in, I think he did a very good job in. I do think he needs to look up to switch the ball more. I think there were a few times where there was one really bad one where he sent it, like, into the sky.
Yeah.
Where he took the ball in, and you can see Johnson just like going down the side, and Poro is trying to overlap on the other side of him as well. Like, just switch the ball, like, play with your head up, because you could tell he didn't want to shoot the ball, but just like keep your head up a little bit more and look for more options. But I was impressed with Werner. It was not really what I was expecting him to play like. Obviously, I think he needs to get the ball on target and not put it 10 feet above the cross,
send it to Mars.
Shot though is the perfect example of how toxic of a club Chelsea Football Club is, because if he had been a Chelsea player and done that, that's literally the only thing that would be on Twitter. Does not matter if he got an assist or whatever. I'm not on the right Twitter side, but I'm not saying I should be seeing it. I think, you know, players have bad shots all the time. I don't care. I'm saying the reaction if he had been at Chelsea would have been insane.
I think one thing that I've been impressed with is his willingness to go to the byline. I think that's such a big thing for a Postecoglou winger, is just drive the ball to the byline and get look for a cutback. And it showed. I mean, the assist that he got from Bentancur came from him trying to make a run to the byline, because he's on his way to the byline, picks up the ball, and then sees Bentancur in space, pulls a cutback, and then Bentancur beats the corpse of Johnny Evans and scores. But yeah, so I think his willingness to go to the byline is an instruction from Postecoglou for one thing, but also just the fact that he's doing it. And one thing that we're assembling at Spurs, everyone that Postecoglou has signed, other than Madison, who is his own breed of player, is a freak athlete. Like Johnson, Werner, Van de Ven, Vicario, they're all freak athletes. They're either huge, fast, or some combination of the two. And I think the idea is for Spurs to become a basketball team and out physical the other team. And I think it might work. Yeah. Like, I think it actually might work.
One attribute per player.
Right.
And I think, like, I don't know if I haven't watched enough Spurs games, but there were so many times where I was like, where is Werner? And then the camera would pan down and he was literally on, like, the left sideline.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I haven't watched enough Spurs games, but he's just, like, completely out of the picture, like, multiple times. I was like, where is Werner at? And I was like, oh, there he is.
I think a lot, yeah, that may be just working out the kinks as he gets used to the system, but a large part of that is because Udogie is so active making those inverted runs. And so he's taking up the spaces that you would probably expect to see Werner in at those times. But
what did I you did want Dragusin came on for a little
oh,
bit.
Oh yeah. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. He did make his debut. He didn't have a whole lot to do, but he did see a lot of the ball, which I think a lot of the Spurs
they were giving it to him.
Yeah, they were. That a lot of the Spurs echo chamber has been concerned that may be the attribute that he lacks is composed passing. Granted, it's not like United put an extreme amount of pressure on him, but from what I saw so far, I mean, I'm pretty pleased with his play on the ball from the 10 minutes, obviously, that we saw. I will say he did lose his man in the 95th minute when Scott McTominay ghosted in into the 6-yard box and had a golden opportunity to win the game for Man United at the end. That was his man, but he had been switched because when he first came on, he was playing right back. And then when Van de Ven had a cramp and had to come off, then Royale came on and he switched to left center back. So he did play two positions in 10 minutes, but yeah, so far I was encouraged, but obviously it's a small sample size. So
it's also McTominay. He's United's leading goal scorer.
He actually is, which is insane.
I was going through my old like photos and I saw I forgot what the other team was, but it was like Ronaldo or no, Ian, but not Ronaldo, but it was someone's like star player and then versus McTominay. That was like the notification that got sent out.
Oh,
the picture. It was funny.
Salah versus McTominay.
Yeah, That was it. It cracked me up.
So, one last note I wanted to make on Spurs is. This is not related to the game, but it was announced that Eric Dier will be leaving on loan. Well, has left on loan to Bayern Munich, and his contract expires at the end of the season. So that is pretty much the end of his career at Spurs. What's up?
I was going to say one of the assistant coaches at Bayern in like the press interview this morning has basically said that him and Kane have not left each other's side like the 48 hours he's been at the club.
Needed a friend.
Yeah. And he did a couple of really nice like goodbye videos with the club media. And like I think the last 4 years he's been much maligned for a lot of reasons. And I mean he hasn't been great. Some of his performances have been not up to scratch, I think, but it's easy to forget that back in the peak Pochettino years, he was one of the crucial elements in that those teams' success because he played that role, the very specialized role under Pochettino of the defensive midfielder who slides between the center backs. And I think, you know, he was such a key part of our title push in 16-17. And he scored the first goal I ever saw for Spurs in the first game of 14-15. Last minute winner against West Ham on his debut. So, yeah, I'm sad that it had to end the way that it ended at Spurs for Eric Dier, where everyone wanted to not see him on the team sheet and everyone was, you know, hoping he would leave and that kind of thing. But, yeah, a great servant to the club who spent a decade here. And I think in a year's time or so, he'll be remembered fondly. So I think, yeah, just wanted to give a quick shout out to Eric Dier. Anyone else have any items on the Premier League match reviews before we move along? Josh, I will make a pit stop in Coventry here to speak about Leicester's first defeat in quite some time. Of course, underscored by the red card to Fatawu, who we said was not going to be gone for AFCON, but he will now be suspended for roughly the same length. So,
it was just like the immaturity because – like around like the 20th minute, Wout Faes was like, hey, like you need to reel in some of these challenges. Like you were going to get yourself sent off. And I don't think it was a red, but there was a Coventry challenge, like right in the box. It was the penalty where he tackled Dewsbury Hall, or he didn't, he, I mean, he did tackle him. He cleared the ball and then followed through, studs up into Dewsbury Hall's thigh, and only got a yellow and was also the last man. So I think that should have been a red, and I don't think Abdul Fatu's red would have happened if that had actually been properly called. Yeah, they were just like on the front foot forward. I remember O'Hare from Coventry had an amazing game. It's just hard. Like, we just looked lacking in attack, and it's just, they just piled the pressure on. It was just, you're going to lose games throughout the season. Like, when you go down to 10 minutes, hard for that to not be. On Monday, we have a huge game against Ipswich. So I just want them to flush the game. We're still 7 points ahead of Ipswich. I'm not terribly worried. They got lucky and got a point in the last one. So I'm hoping that we come out strong and get the 3 points and stretch it to 10 above them, and depending on how Southampton play this weekend, hopefully stretch it to 10 above second.
Yeah, and Ipswich are not secure either, because they're only now 3 points ahead of Southampton. They've kind of been on an iffy run, and that gap that they had previously has sort of disappeared. So yeah, it is a big game for both teams, and then a big result for Coventry as well, because that brings them into the playoff places. So they're going to be in and amongst things going forward.
It's also not like Fatawu's red card is not the only reason that that happened. They've also just been rolling the past like 10 match weeks. They've been on a huge kick, and it's a rivalry game too. And I think it's really easy for Leicester fans to forget about rivalries just when we were in the Prem for so long, and we didn't have rivalries for the most part while we were in the Prem, because all the teams were in the Championship at the time.
So as our resident Championship aficionado, we did some, yeah, at least in the fact that you actually watched some games, and I don't think any of the rest of us do. Off the cuff, if you could give us a prediction for which three teams you think will be making an appearance in the Premier League next season, who would you pick? Leicester won for sure.
Leicester, Sunderland, or Leicester and Southampton and Sunderland.
Okay.
I'd be pumped about Sunderland.
Sunderland looked very good against top teams. They were really unlucky. There were some horrendous calls against Ipswich that got Ipswich their equalizer. But they have looked very, very good recently. And I also just would love to see them in the Prem again.
I think they just announced that they're doing like one more season of Sunderland Till I Die.
Oh, no kidding.
I'm being serious. I think so, yeah.
I hope not. Just
maybe they're expecting to get promoted.
I just don't want to give Netflix my money.
Well, that's
Netflix
fair,
has had some bangers recently.
Dude, they have, but they're stupid.
The household thing is really bad.
It is dumb. Yeah, it's dumb.
It's just, eh. It had some, but also I just like don't really want to watch any of their stuff. Just, it's annoying.
No, I get it, but still cool for those who do have it.
That was a great series.
Gentlemen, it's quiz time. It's quiz time, baby. That is the mystery segment that we previewed earlier in the podcast. We hope you've stuck around to get your teeth sunk into this quiz. All right. Let me give you a little cinematic intro to the quiz here this week. 2023 is a thing of the past. We're only 2 weeks into 2024, and already it seems that last year's events were an eon ago. However, I'm hoping that the three of you and our listeners haven't forgotten too much, because this is a 2023-based quiz. So hop in the time machine and cast your minds back to the year in review. This is a 12-round quiz, with one question coming from events in each month of the year 2023.
Wow.
Not to worry, of course, there will be a tiebreaker in the event of any photo finishes at the end of the quiz. This is a similar style to the quiz that we had last time, where you must buzz in before answering by shouting your own name. And if you get the question incorrect, you will be frozen out for the round until everyone has given an answer. Yeah, exactly. Does everyone understand the parameters of the quiz?
Yes.
Yep.
Is everyone ready to begin the quiz?
Josh.
I guess.
Okay. Starting with January. In last year's January window, Manchester United signed two loanees, neither of whom stayed at the club past the end of the season. One was the highly questionable acquisition of Wout Weghorst, but who was the other?
Reese. Sabitzer.
It was Marcel Sabitzer. 1 point to Reese.
I forgot he was a person.
I did too, which is why I made it the question. Southampton sacked manager Nathan Jones on February 12th. His replacement ultimately guided Saints to a bottom place finish and was sacked at the end of the season before taking the head coach job at Reading. Who was his replacement?
Oh, gosh.
Josh. Scott Parker.
Oh, God. I totally forgot everything about Southampton last season just because how bad they were.
I don't even remember the first guy. Who'd you say?
The German.
Well, Nathan Jones was the first manager they had that season was Ralf Hasenhüttl. The second one was Nathan Jones.
I don't remember the second guy at all.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll start by giving you a hint that his nationality is Spanish. Josh is frozen out, so quit making that face.
Josh is so confused.
Oh, God.
His initials are RS. Maybe this was too difficult a question.
RS?
His first name is Ruben.
Okay, I know who it is, but I just totally don't know his name.
I'm going to call no points on this question. I'm going to call no
Ruben
points.
Silva.
No, the correct answer is Ruben Saez.
Yeah, Ruben Saez.
All right.
That wouldn't have been my guess.
Too difficult a question. No points.
I could see him, but I just didn't know his name.
I can't see him.
I don't even remember Nathan Jones.
Yeah. Southampton had a season to forget, for sure. Okay. Wolves fullback Johnny Otto won goal of the month for March with an outrageous goal against Leeds United scored from what location on the pitch?
Halfway line? Wait, Josh.
Josh.
The halfway line?
The halfway line is correct.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Well, if I'd been quicker, I could have stolen that from you.
Point for Josh. Okay, this question will be a little bit different. You will not be required to buzz in. This is going to be a numbers question where you each have to give me a number and whoever is the closest will get the point. But in order to prevent you from being dickheads and encircling the poor guy who goes first, I'm going to demand that each of you text me your answer individually. So everyone gets your phones out, punch in your number. This is to prevent, you know, someone from going first and then the other two people from
because I would have done that.
End to end, exactly. So everyone's going to text me your answer first. Okay. Here's the question. On April 23rd, Newcastle utterly humiliated Spurs, scoring the fastest 5 goals ever in a Premier League game. In what minute did Newcastle make it 5-0? In what minute did Newcastle score the 5th goal to make it the fastest 5 goals ever scored in the Premier League game? Okay, the answers are in. I can confirm that one person has nailed it. Ooh. One person has got the exact correct number. And that person is Josh.
Wow. Let's go.
With the 21st minute. Ethan and Reese have submitted 32 and, or sorry, Ethan submitted 34 and Reese submitted 32, respectively. Josh, the 21st minute is absolutely correct. 21st. What a shout by you. I know.
I was giving y'all more credit.
Yeah.
No, I remembered it being like stupid and really kind of sad.
I actually thought in my head like 20 something, and I was like, that's so mean. That can't be true.
It was almost 19. It was very close to being below 20. So, yeah. Yeah, pretty bad. Okay. So point to Josh. It's currently Josh with a score of 2, Reese with a score of 1, Ethan with a score of 0. Only because we had a question that was too difficult by me. So on May 19th, the final day of the Premier League season saw the conclusion of the first ever Premier League season after instating which major rule change?
Wait, say that again.
The final day of the Premier League season saw the conclusion of the first ever Premier League season after instating which major rule change? Basically, the question
Reece.
Is...
Josh.
No, Reece. I was waiting for him to speak. Damn it.
Is it concussion subs?
It is not concussion
subs. Five subs?
It is 5 subs.
No!
It I is that five was
2 years ago.
And I've given it to Josh anyway, even though he didn't buzz in because he kind of buzzed in. And
he
then
did.
Reece.
He did.
Yeah. But yes, it is 5 substitutes.
Oh, I thought that was 2 years ago.
No, because it was after the World Cup. The World Cup did it first.
Yeah.
I
good
thought
shout
it was
by
after
Josh.
COVID.
Perhaps I'm incorrect, but my research indicated that was the first ever season with a full season with 5 substitutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Manchester City completed just the second ever treble in English football history on June 10th when they beat Inter 1-0 in the Champions League final thanks to a 68th-minute strike from what player?
Ethan. Rodri.
Rodri is the correct answer.
Yes.
Ethan's on the board.
Finally get a damn point in this shit. I was nervous I wasn't going to get anything.
Spurs appointed Ange Postecoglou on July 1st. His appointment meant that Spurs had how many managers in 2023?
Reese.
4.
4
is the correct answer. Antonio Conte, Christian Stellini, Ryan Mason, and Ange Postecoglou.
Ryan Mason was the one. I almost had a brain fart.
3 American players were signed by Premier League clubs in the month of August. Name 2 of them.
Reese. Tyler Adams and Trusty.
Yes, that is correct. Acceptable answers were Tyler Adams, Matt Turner, and Austin Trusty. Let me get the scores. Josh and Reese tied in the lead with 3 points apiece, but Ethan is not out of the game with 1. This one might be a tricky one, but I've got some hints lined up. Maybe someone knows it. I don't know. On September 30th, Spurs and Liverpool were involved in one of the Premier League's most controversial VAR decisions to date when VAR failed to intervene on Luis Diaz's goal that was incorrectly ruled out for offside. It was revealed the following day that the VAR official, Darren England, and his assistants had been subject to an 8-hour flight from which country mere hours before the game?
Josh. Greece?
Incorrect.
I'm trying to gather the question. Ask that again.
So okay, I won't do the whole thing again because there's some context involved. But essentially, the VAR official was on a plane, an 8-hour flight, hours before the game, the Liverpool Spurs game. And what country did he fly in from? Was revealed in like a secret files type
Reese.
Investigation. Reese.
Turkey.
It is not Turkey.
I don't even have a guess.
I'm going to give Ethan a chance to guess, and then I have a hint that will probably get you there.
America.
America is incorrect. The hint is, while they were there, they might have seen the tallest building in the world.
Reese. Yes! Josh! Use that Reese! Use that Reese!
It's incredible.
I don't actually know how to handle that. I'm gonna go ahead and give it to Reese.
No, fuck off. I said my name right after. Fuck off. No.
I yelled Reese when you yelled Reese.
You guys did yell Reese at the same time, and then Josh switched to say Josh. So the rules state that you have to buzz in saying your own name. So the rules do state that.
Is the answer Dubai?
That's not the country. That's not the country. That's not the country.
Dubai is not a country.
Ethan.
United. No, fuck off. No, 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 no.
Ethan Ethan did technically buzz in before.
Is it the UAE? No, because I said it right after Reese.
I might get it wrong. Calm down. Is it the UAE?
It is the UAE. The UAE is the correct answer.
That's bullshit.
Josh, all of this could have been solved if you
don't get mad
in,
that you didn't buzz in.
Said Reese. I said my name right after I said Reese.
Okay, but Reese got it wrong. You got to do it again.
That's bullshit.
It's like Jeopardy.
No, because if we would have said it at the same time, I would have had the same. I would have gotten go right after him if I went like.
That's not how that works. Jeopardy That's rules. Not how that works. Buzz.
That's bullshit.
Controversy in the quiz as Josh states his someone else's name.
Josh, if you had said Josh, maybe, but you said Reese.
And then I said Josh right after.
Yeah, but you said Reese first.
Bullshit. That is fucking bullshit.
Ethan is back in the game. 1 point deficit between Ethan, Reese, and Josh. It's 3-3-2 at the moment.
Can I get a question check, please?
Wait, I thought it was 4-3-2. Didn't Reese just get the August one?
I think I have three.
Yeah, Reese has three, even after the August one. What was the question check? Sorry.
What number are we on?
This is question 10. This is the October question. So there's three more questions left. Saman Ghoddos won October's Premier League Goal of the Month, meaning he became the second Iranian ever to win the award, after which other player won it for a bicycle kick Ethan. Against Chelsea? Ethan.
Jahanbash.
It is Alireza Jahanbash. And Ethan has tied the quiz. It is threes all around with two questions to go. Everton were hit with a 10-point deduction on November 17th. In their first game after the event, Everton fans held up sheets of paper with the Premier League logo and the word corrupt printed on them in the 10th minute. However, what award-winning event took place 7 minutes before the protest even began?
Wait, what?
Everton's first game after the deduction.
No, I got that. What was the question?
What award-winning event took place 7 minutes before the protest was even able to begin? The protest happened in the 10th minute. So I'm saying basically what award-winning event happened in the third minute of Everton's first game after the deduction? I do have hints lined up.
Do you mean like a card or a goal?
No. Like an outside event.
Or get outside.
No. It was an event in the game.
Oh.
Ethan, goal of the month?
Ethan... Yes, but I'm looking for a little bit more specifics.
Reese.
Josh got that one.
Calvert-Lewin goal?
Incorrect. Reese.
Garnacho bicycle kick.
Garnacho bicycle kick is the correct answer.
Well, you said award, so I was thinking not the player, like the kind of thing awarded.
I said... Award-winning event, which maybe I probably could have worded the question better, but Reese pulls into a narrow lead to end off the quiz. So Josh and Ethan, if one of you can get the next question, we will go to a tiebreaker round. If Reese gets the next question, the quiz is over. On December 16th, Luton had to abandon their Premier League fixture in the 65th minute due to the horrible health scare involving captain Tom Lockyer. Who was their opponent?
Ethan, Bournemouth.
Ethan buzzed in. I heard Ethan first. And Bournemouth is the correct answer. Ethan has tied the quiz. Josh is remonstrating. Josh, you won the last quiz.
Should be on the tiebreaker right now.
You said
that's just not
you
true.
Said Reese. You said Reese.
It's completely true.
Here,
no one is. Okay, whatever.
Here is the tiebreaker question. Okay, how about this, Josh? If Reese and Ethan both buzz in and get it wrong, I'll give you a shot. All right. The tiebreaker is going to be for January 2024. There was only one game on New Year's Day this year when Liverpool hosted Newcastle United at Anfield. Who scored the first Premier League goal of 2024?
Reese. McAllister?
It was not Alexis McAllister. Ethan.
Salah.
It was Mohamed Salah. To take the comeback victory in the quiz, it was Mohamed Salah.
Dude, well, I thought I was going to fucking get zero.
What a comeback victory by you. Josh is pissed. Reese is depressed.
Congratulations, Ethan.
Some good questions in there by the answer stinkers.
Oh, I just said congratulations, and you did the wave goodbye. That's so foul.
I didn't hear you, so I just thought you were chatting about that rule thing.
No, I just said congratulations.
Well, thank you. I take that back, Josh.
I didn't have a rule written for if someone buzzed in stating their someone else's name. So unfortunately, you were victim of that, Josh. But congratulations to Ethan. Some good questions by me, a couple duds, but that's all right. We move. It's that time. It's album of the week time. Our newly crowned quiz champion is going to present us with the album of the week.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to get zero next time. That's just how it happens, but I'll take it for now. I don't know if I've done this one yet, but they were number four on my Spotify Wrapped this past year, and I feel like I don't talk about it enough and how much I like them, but going for The Doors' second album, Strange Days. I think The Doors have a great sound of guitar and keyboard, as well as a great frontman with Jim Morrison. I picked Strange Days because it feels like strange days for my team personally. I think it feels like forever since we've played, because, I mean, we played in the FA Cup on the 4th of January, I think. But before that, last time we played Premier League was in December. So, and then obviously all the circus clown shit going on in the background. Strange days indeed.
Josh, how about Jersey of the Week?
So yesterday I went to watch the Spurs play the Hawks in Atlanta, just because Spurs, I got to watch them a lot last season. They were one of my favorite basketball teams. I got to see Wembanyama play, who is 7'4".
Wemby.
They just like throw the ball up there, and he had like, I think he had 5 alley-oops, and like, I think he had 13 dunks in total. It was crazy. But I got a Trae Young Atlanta Hawks jersey.
That's hype.
It was like 50% off because the sponsor is different than it is this year. But it's just very
that's steel. That is very nice. That's like their old, I mean, it's like a throwback because that's what the colors they used to wear.
Yeah, because they kind of went back to the throwback ones. But yeah, I really like it. And it was definitely worth the buck. And Atlanta was a cool city. I kind of want to go there for more than a basketball game and like lunch. It'd be a cool city because they have like the College Football Hall of Fame. They have like a really fancy aquarium. And I think it's just an interesting city.
I don't know if they have, I don't know if this is in Atlanta, but it's in Georgia. But the World of Coke is kind of
right
crazy.
By, so yeah. The like Falcon Stadium was here. The Hawks Arena was here. World of Coke was like over here a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that would also be a cool place to go. And we walked past the CNN building. It was like the building like right next to the Hawks Arena, which was kind of weird to see it just like out in the open.
Yeah.
It's also, if rumors are to be believed, going to get a third shot at getting an NHL team, which is incredible to me. But yeah.
Very strange.
If it's to Houston, Houston would go crazy.
Well, Houston's going to be the other. So they say it's going to be Atlanta and Houston is the next expansion. But
it gets people to stop dick riding Houston Astros. Take away from
I that. Would not like there to be a Houston hockey team because I
don't want
then,
the rivalry.
Well, we lose the Texas hockey thing if there's a team in Houston. Like the whole point of it is that we're the only team in Texas, but
yeah, but that rivalry would be insane.
Yeah, the rivalry would be fun. But all right. I believe that brings our proceedings to an end. So I'm going to say a big thank you to everyone for stopping by. So thanks to Reese.
Yeah, thanks for hosting. Thanks for making the quiz. I tried my best after you said it was 2023 theme to emulate 2023 Arsenal season and throw the lead away right at the end. So I hope you enjoyed that one.
Ethan as well.
This means you're going to come back strong next quiz. But yeah, thank you for hosting. Thank you for making the quiz. I know there wasn't much to do this week, but I think it was a great episode nonetheless.
And Josh as well. Sorry for ruining your night.
I'll apologize for my outburst. I got delivered a cookie from my wife. So it can't be that bad. I apologize for my outburst.
All right. Big thanks to the listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the quiz. We hope you're enjoying what little Premier League action there is right now. And we hope you're staying safe, staying healthy. And it's a goodbye from us.